court will call Henderson versus City of Fort Morgan. That's case number 10CA1409. And Kelly?
Beal. Mr. Kelly sends his regrets.
Okay, Mr. Beal. We are ready to proceed if, whenever you're ready, sir.
I am ready.
Would you like me to try to help you?
I can see the yellow when it comes up.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and my colleague, Mr. Wells, Ms. Swansea. As I said, Mr. Kelly sends his regrets. He's working hard in the lakes of Canada, struggling to catch fish, and my colleague Mr. Zansberg is called away on another court appearance. I represent Ron Henderson, a citizen of the city of Fort Morgan. This is a case under the open meetings law, and the questions presented involve the question of whether the open meetings law prohibits the use of secret ballots by public bodies to make decisions that would otherwise be controlled by the open meetings law, and furthermore, to the extent that there is a prohibition on the use of secret ballots, whether under Colorado's Constitution, Article 20, Section 6, home rule charter communities have the right to preempt a prohibition under the open meetings law with respect to voting in secret. I'd like to break form a little bit and offer to your honors a hypothetical to think about in the context of the issues presented. That hypothetical is, what if we were to have a legislature that was debating budget decisions, highly contentious budget decisions in a very in difficult times of reduced funds? The legislative body votes by secret ballot, and the vote is 9-6-1 to reduce the money allocated for the recreation department. And the legislature votes again by secret ballot not to reduce the funds for an alumni organization. As you might suspect, this is not a hypothetical. This actually happened in March. The Associated Student Government of the University of Colorado, the legislative body of the student government of CU, voted by secret ballot 6 times on budget questions. The assertion at the time was that the open meetings law did not prohibit the use of secret ballots, and therefore it was perfectly appropriate to make these secret decisions because the decisions were so controversial they needed to be done in secret. Your Honors, the primary reason we say in answer to the question, why are secret ballots not lawful under the open meetings law, as Mr. Wells and the City of Fort Morgan argued and as Judge Vannoy held, there is no explicit language specifically within the open meetings law that says secret ballots are prohibited. However, it has been the law of the state of Colorado since the late 1970s, when the Colorado Supreme Court decided the Bagby case, that public bodies subject to the open meetings law may not engage in rubber stamp voting. What is rubber stamp voting? Rubber stamp voting is a decision is arrived at in secret, in an executive session, in illegal conferences between members of the public body. A decision is made in secret, and then in a public meeting, the door is open, the recording is on, the public body votes and rubber stamps that prior decision. Bagby, Van Alstyne, Walsenburg, Hanover School District, all of those cases hold that rubber stamp voting is illegal under the open meetings law. If rubber stamp voting is illegal, secret ballots are illegal.
Mr. Beal, let me just ask you, you were referring to the discussions and the deliberations being held in secret. In this particular case, were the discussions and deliberations held in secret?
No, Your Honor. This, by the pleadings of our complaint and the argument of the city, this was an open meeting. This was a properly noticed, the three meetings in question were properly noticed. The doors were open, the public attended, minutes were made, and the recording of the vote was recorded in the minutes. The vote that was recorded was the tally, the ultimate outcome of the vote. In one particular case, there were several rounds of voting. In one case, there was only one round, and in the first case, there were two rounds of voting, I believe. In any event, the totals of those votes were recorded, and they were publicly visible, or at least they were publicly announced by the city clerk at the time. What wasn't known is who voted for whom. And as a result of not knowing who voted for whom, the public was unable to determine how a particular person got into the office they got into.
So you're equating an anonymous ballot with is the same thing as a secret ballot?
Certainly, it functions the same way. We don't know who voted for whom. And there is, fundamentally, probably even constitutionally, I believe, a right to cast an anonymous ballot in an election. But there is not a right to cast an anonymous ballot in a representative body. The essence of a Republican form of government, where we have representatives who represent constituents, and the constituents can exercise accountability over the representatives, is that the constituents know what the representatives did. It's impossible to do to exercise accountability in that context where the constituents don't know what votes the representatives engaged in.
Mr. Beal, even agreeing with that statement, does the open meetings law require a particular voting procedure?
No. As I think it was the city council, the city attorney in Aspen, where they engaged in a secret ballot in March to fill a replacement, the city attorney in Aspen announced or told the board that under the open meetings law, they could flip a coin and make a decision. The open meetings law does not direct a manner of decision making, whether it be flip a coin, draw straws. However, the open meetings law does require that the decision making be open. The public needs to be able to see the coin flip. The public needs to be able to see the straw. The public needs to be able to see who voted for whom. It doesn't require a particular manner of voting. It requires open voting. The prohibitions of the open meeting law with respect to executive sessions, and in particular the prohibition on making decisions behind closed doors, and the provision that says any decision reached in a meeting that failed to comply with the requirements of 402 section, subsection 2, that's 402.8. 402.8 says decisions made at meetings that fail to comply with 402.2 are invalid. 402.2 is the provision that requires all meetings be open to the public at all times. What does open mean in this context? Open is not defined. It's not a defined term. We have cases from around the country that say open means not secret. If you go to your Black's Law Dictionary, it'll tell you that open as an adjective means patent, obvious, notorious, not secret, not closed. Those are all attempts to understand what open means. Some cases have litigated the question of whether open means a meeting far away. Okay, part of the issue there is the ability of the person to attend the meeting. What happens when the person attends the meeting? Can the person see the decision making? In the Walsenburg case, this court held that the important aspect of the open meetings law, the gift that the people of Colorado first created and that the legislature intended extended to local public bodies, the gift is the ability to observe and participate in legislative decision making. Under the city's interpretation of the open meetings law, where there is no prohibition on secret ballots, public bodies could set up glass walls. We can see, Your Honors, we just can't hear you. That would not be a violation of the open meetings law under the rule advocated by the city. As long as the door is open, as long as I can come in, but I can't see what happens, I can't hear what happens, as long as I'm present, that's open. That, Your Honors, is not sufficient under the open meetings law. The open meetings law at the outset in its legislative declaration says that the public's business is not to be conducted in secret. It is a legislative declaration, however, it animates, it illuminates the underlying goal of the statute, which is to ensure that the public has an opportunity to observe decision-making. It is not sufficient to know what the total vote was, that it was 3-2 or 2-1. If it were 2-1, I'd really like to know who was the one in this decision.
Mr. Beal, in the three instances that we're talking about in this case, the record indicates that the meetings were open to the public. Is that correct?
The record indicates that the door was open. The record indicates that the notice was properly announced, that that the public was present. I dispute, Your Honor, whether it was sufficient to meet the standard under the statute of whether it was open.
I understand the agreement. I just want to ask whether the record indicates if there was any discussion among the council members in each one of these three incidents or three events. Some discussion that could be heard by the public who was there.
The record does not address that question because the posture of this case is a motion to dismiss by the city. All that there is in the record are the pleadings of the plaintiff. The plaintiff's pleadings don't specifically allege whether or not there was a discussion. I will offer to your court, and I believe Mr. Wells is going to be able to answer it because he was there, that at least in the context of the most recent of the votes, there was discussion among council members regarding candidates. This was the vote that went through some number of rounds of balloting, all secret balloting, and that in part there was a discussion, I believe it actually instigated by Mr. Wells, about the manner in which the council could reduce the number of candidates so that they could get to a majority decision.
My question goes to this. If there was discussion among the council members about the pros and cons of the issue before them, sure, the vacancies to be filled, would that, in your opinion, satisfy the open meetings law if the public could hear that council member number one seemed to be discussing this particular candidate as being unfavorable, and while candidate number one may also be discussing this particular candidate as being more favorable, and the public could hear that? Would that make a difference in your opinion?
It would make a difference from the point of view of the public's knowledge, the amount of information the public has, but it wouldn't solve the fundamental problem under the statute, which is the public doesn't know whether the council member who said that he thought that the particular candidate was the best candidate, did that council member actually vote in that manner? And in particular, in this context, we had rounds of voting. There may have been discussion at the beginning. I don't know whether there was discussion at the end, but council members' votes changed over the course of that set of rounds, and we don't know who voted for whom at which time. I haven't addressed the preemption questions. I'll reserve that with the 2 minutes and 20 seconds that I have left. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wells.
Thank you, Your Honor. I may please the court. Mr. Beal. My name is Jeff Wells. I'm the city attorney for the city of Fort Morgan. I have with me today Jeray Swanson, who's the assistant city attorney and has helped with the briefing and preparation for these arguments. The city of Fort Morgan is asking that this court uphold the district court's ruling dismissing the plaintiff by Mr. Henderson, finding that the vote taken by city council and the selection of three different officials conformed with the open meetings law. There are three reasons. Well, the issue before the court today is a lot more narrow, I believe, than what is being presented by Mr. Beal. The issue is whether the use of confidential ballots to appoint local officials as required by the city's home rule charter is a violation of the Colorado Open Meetings Law.
I noticed that position in your briefs, that it's required by the city's home rule charter that these ballots be confidential. And the way I see that, Article 3, Section 7 says all votes of the council upon appointments shall be by ballot.
Correct.
I don't see the word confidential anywhere, or anonymous, or any other word that would indicate that the ballots have to be undisclosed.
And that's a very good point, Your Honor, but I think what you need to, or what this panel needs to consider, is what has been the practice of the city of Fort Morgan. In the Glenwood Springs case, the court held that it needs to give deference to how a home rule municipality defines its own charter. And for time in memoriam, as long as the city council has been appointing officials, they have cast secret ballots. And I think that that is evidenced in the record based upon how they continued, or at least conducted themselves, in these three most recent appointments.
Are you saying that the city council of Fort Morgan has interpreted its city charter that says appointments shall be by ballot, that has interpreted that and has a policy that that means anonymous or confidential ballot?
Yes.
They've added a word in there.
Well, I wouldn't say that they added a word. I think they took the plain meaning of ballot as known by normal everyday citizens. You know, when a normal everyday citizen goes and casts their ballot to vote for the President of the United States, they don't necessarily disclose that to anyone. And I think that that's how the city council for years has interpreted the meaning of ballot within their own charter, that I'm casting a vote with a ballot. And if you look at the general meaning of ballot under the Merriam-Online Dictionary as we proposed, and even if you look at various versions of the Black's Law Dictionary, ballot implies secrecy, that there's an implication by the word itself that what that person is voting or what they're putting on that ballot is not necessarily disclosed or isn't disclosed to the public. So I think if the issue comes down to a determination as to what ballot means in the city's charter, this court should give deference to what the practice and policy has been from the city council for years, as well as what the plain meaning would be to an ordinary citizen. I believe that the plaintiffs spent a lot of time trying to demonstrate that the ballot in this context, it should somehow be different than a secret ballot. But I think the position of the council has always been that ballot means it's anonymous.
Mr. Wells, if ballot implies secrecy, why does it not conflict with the openness of the open meetings law?
That's a very good question, and I think it comes down to the plain language of the Colorado open meetings law itself. If you look in there, it's undisputed that there is no specific method for voting that is required. And if you look at the statute as a whole and interpret it based upon its individual parts, there is a lot of latitude, I think, given to governing bodies to make the decisions or determine how they're going to make decisions. I think in the Van Alstyne case, the court, or this court, stated that it is not the purpose of the open meetings law to determine how a local public body is going to conduct their business. With regard to secrecy, the fact that the public doesn't know specifically how an individual votes is not necessarily a violation of the open meetings law. As is uncontested in this case, the public had a right to be present. The city conformed with all the specific requirements under the open meetings law. Nothing prohibited citizens later to come back and challenge the decision by city council through of their decision. And I think that the use of ballot, the use of the ballot was done in such a way that it did provide the public with the right to be present, to see what the discussion was, to see what the presentations by the individual applicants for the positions were, and to determine, based upon that information, how the votes were done. One thing that is also undisputed is that the ballots were maintained. And pursuant to an open records request, Mr. Henderson did obtain all of the ballots and was able to review the number of votes and that the votes were cast in a specific way, that the person that was actually voted into the office received the majority number of votes.
Mr. Wells, the authorship of the ballot was secret.
That is correct, but the actual ballots themselves were maintained.
All right, so then looking at the open meetings law, what it's requiring, that do you agree that a vote is a formal action taken at a public meeting?
I would say that the formal action is the result of a vote.
So actual voting, so your position is the actual voting process is not a formal action?
Correct. If you look at the term formal action, it relates to motions, resolutions, ordinances, things that council as a whole makes a decision on. It's not a formal action if it fails. It's not a formal action if the council doesn't affirmatively vote in a majority to do something. For example, I have no authority as the city attorney to file a lawsuit against anybody unless the council votes in a majority in a resolution or a motion that I take that action. So I have no formal action and affirmative allowance to do something unless it passes. So my position would be that formal action is not the vote itself, it's the outcome of the vote.
Let me ask you this. Mr. Beal has given us arguments, has made arguments about policy reasons as to why the open meetings law should be construed to prohibit secret balloting or anonymous balloting or confidential balloting or whatever you want to call it. Can you give us policy reasons as to why we should not interpret, I'm saying policy reasons, not the language of the statute?
Sure.
Because it's subject to interpretation, as Mr. Beal argued.
And
what's the policy that Fort Morgan relies upon to keep its balloting anonymous?
Well, I think there's a couple of issues that I can address, or a couple of things I'd address with that question. First of all, this is a very narrow situation. A lot of the policy issues that have been brought up by Mr. Beal relate to issues a lot broader than what you find in the city's charter. We're not voting on there. It's illegal for the city council to vote on budgetary issues and any issue other than appointments. So as far as a policy issue, the policy issue that is focused on here is the appointment of officials and nothing else. And I think the policy argument that the city would make, didn't make in its briefs because obviously it's not in the record or anything else, is that in a small community, in order to get things done, people need to cooperate and get along. And generally, I think when you have people coming onto a council in a small community where they know what specific council members do not like them or maybe had an issue against them being appointed to the council, you automatically create adversarial positions on the council for personal reasons as opposed to maybe a policy position. And I think that detracts from the purpose of the city council, that they are then engaged in a personal difference from the outset as opposed to focusing on the work of the public. I would provide that as a policy reason as to why this and this narrow situation makes sense for the city of Fort Morgan.
You mentioned that this is the only council came.
That is correct.
So all other voting by council in Fort Morgan requires open balloting.
Correct.
Or non-anonymous balloting.
In fact,
it's only with regard to the appointment of officers and other designees.
Correct. And in fact, under the charter, roll call vote is taken for resolutions and ordinances. Motions are by ayes or nays. And I think all of that is made public for all other decisions within the city of Fort Morgan. And that's why we urge this court to look at this case as one of a narrow interpretation or narrow facts, because it really doesn't have bad implications for the state. It has an implication for the city of Fort Morgan and how it's appointed its elected officials and appointed officials for years. And so the city of Fort Morgan is not going to go out and have a vote on this year's budget based upon ballots. It will make a vote on an ordinance in the public, and they'll all click their light up or down as to whether or not they approve the budget, as they have for years on budgetary issues. So I think that this is a very limited issue. Going back to Judge Lichtenstein's question of why this isn't secret, I think if you look at the statutory history of the open meetings law, there were very radical changes in 1991. Where the legislature, the General Assembly, came in and provided definitions to a lot of things that weren't previously in the statute. What is a meeting? What is adequate notice? Minutes are required. And they really fleshed out what they believed, and the General Assembly as a whole voted on the language as to what they believed was the baseline, or I guess the basis, for open meetings within the state of Colorado. What they left out in those changes was roll call voting or a process for voting. And they certainly could have done that, and they were aware of that. In other places in the Colorado statutes, especially those that govern statutory cities and towns, there is no requirement for roll call voting except when you're voting on a contract or a budgetary item. So the legislature understood voting requirements. They also have voting requirements specified for school districts. The legislature understood voting requirements. They did not include them in the open meetings law. And I think that's important for the court to focus on, because in this case, they left out any specific requirement for how votes would be taken. If you look at a lot of the case law from other states that have been provided by the plaintiff, the law in Michigan, the law in Pennsylvania, the law in New York, all these different places, if you focus and look on their open meetings law or the open records law that corresponds with the open meetings law, there is specific voting requirements in those laws. That isn't in the case of Colorado. There aren't specific voting requirements or recording of votes requirements in the open meetings law. And I think that that's how you distinguish all of those cases, not just because they're outside of the state of Colorado, but because of the fact that they are interpreting a completely different law, a completely different set of language or language itself. One of the issues I'd like to spend the last 2 minutes on is obviously the preemption issue. I think there's three reasons why the court can uphold the district court's ruling. One, there is no conflict. The plain language of the statute does not provide any specific requirement for the city of Fort Morgan on how it will vote. The second two issues are, first, the Colorado Constitution under Article 20, Section 6 provides that the city of Fort Morgan has plenary authority to legislate or make decisions on local issues. And that express and specific authority is found for judges under 6 subsection 1C. It can establish its own courts and how it puts judges into place. It also has the same thing for its leaders within and its officials within the city. It establishes its officials' positions and selects those officials. That express authority under the Constitution preempts or makes it illegal to enforce the open meetings law against a charter provision that is established for those specific purposes. And I would point out to the court that that is the specific purpose for that principle or that clause within the city's charter, is to select officials, including judges and including vacancies on the court. The third reason why this court should uphold the district court is based upon the situation that you believe that a preemption analysis is necessary, that you do find a conflict and you do not believe that the specific language under Section 6, Article 20 preempts, automatically makes this legal for the city. And if you go through the conflict analysis, I think that you will find that all of the factors in there weigh heavily on the side of the city. There's no extraterritorial impacts, and if there are, they're de minimis. There is no need for uniformity in this case, because uniformity in and of itself is not necessary to establish that factor. I'm out of time. I appreciate your comments and questions today. Thank you.
Mr. Wells. Mr. Beal.
Could I just like to catch up with Judge Steinstein? I apologize. With respect to what is formal action, whether voting secret ballots is a formal action, the particular language of the statute that is in play in that context is whether the public body has adopted a proposed policy, position, resolution, regulation, or formal action. Any of that comes within the scope of the open meetings law, or at least comes within the scope of the requirement that that decision making, adoption of a proposed long list, is done in an open meeting. I think there's no question that a vote is an adoption of a proposed position. Whether it's an adoption of proposed formal action, I think it also is, but it doesn't matter. With respect to the preemption question, Your Honors, I think that as Mr. Wells laid out, the first question is there a conflict? We submit that there is. The next question is, under the Town of Telluride versus San Miguel Valley Corporation, is the state statute, open meetings law, directly abrogating a specific power delegated to a home rule charter community? That's what happened in San Miguel. In San Miguel, this was the question of Telluride's out of jurisdiction, eminent domain of the valley floor, outside its boundaries. The question was whether or not Town of Telluride had the power to engage in eminent domain beyond its borders. There is a specific, explicit authorization for eminent domain outside the borders in Section 1 of Article 20. Colorado Supreme Court held when there was a specific authorization of a power to a home rule charter community, a state statute cannot purport to abrogate it. That is not the case here. There is no specific authorization for the use of secret ballots. There is no specific authorization for any manner of voting in a meeting by a home rule charter city council. The only thing that the Article 20, Section 6 speaks to is the definition of qualifications, the definition of terms, and whether or not municipal officers will be appointed or elected. The manner in which they are appointed is not spoken to. And that's why there is no abrogation of a specific authorization. I'm out of time. I could address the balancing factors if Your Honors wished, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Beal. And we thank both of you for your excellent arguments. They are very helpful to us. And this matter will now stand submitted, and an opinion will be issued in due course.